Hi guys, it's me, it's Greg Knox. These are the worst date news ever. Wow, I can't believe it's been so long since I did a show for you guys. It's, it's mental. It's been like over a year. It's been way too long. Now, in case you're wondering kind of what I've been doing for the last year, I mean, I moved house. So I was living in the mean streets of South Croydon. I'm now living in the mean streets of Hawley, which for those of you who don't know, is kind of just on the outskirts of Gatwick Airport. So I now have my own kind of place to record my shows for you, which is really, really awesome. Other than that, yeah, I've just been working. Yeah, I'm working from home, obviously, because of everything that's going on. I felt that now was the right time to kind of bring you guys the new series. So before I kind of tell you all about kind of the episode that you're going to listen to today, I want to thank every single person listening to this. If you have ever listened to any of my previous episodes, some of which have done incredibly well, and I'm really happy and I'm so appreciative of it. Like whether you listen to the episode that I did on Come and See, Solo, on The Piano Teacher, on Romper Stomper, or if you listen to some of the, shall we say, more disreputable episodes that I did on something like, you know, Human Centipede or the Vomit Gore Trilogy, which is quite an infamous episode. I think that's probably the most infamous episode that I've done so far, is that episode for some reason. Even Megan Is Missing. I don't know what happened. Like last year, like all these people started downloading my Megan Is Missing episode, like completely out the blue. Apparently it got really popular on TikTok somehow. Like, I don't know. It just, I'm an old man, guys. It's these things, like these things confuse me. But anyway, irrespective of all that, like I said, all my love and appreciation to anyone who listened on any of the formats or any of the platforms that I'm on. And it's through you guys that I kind of keep doing this show. And yeah, it's through you that I've decided to carry on and do another series, even though it's been, like I said, over a year since I did the last one. So with that out of the way, all the mushy stuff out of the way, you probably want me to hurry up and get to talking about August Underground, and that's what I'm going to do in a sec. But I need to give you guys a little bit of a warning about August Underground if you don't know what you're getting yourselves into. So start of the last series mentioned covered three little films called The Vomit Gore Trilogy, directed by Lisa Valentine, and this is the August Underground Trilogy, directed by Fred Vogel. Now, these are examples of what are known as fake snuff movies. So if you know what a snuff movie is, you kind of know what you're getting yourself into. But if you don't, these are three of possibly the most disturbing films of all time. One of them definitely is. One of them, I would say, is probably the most disturbing film that I've ever watched, or at least in the top three anyway. And there's a lot of really horrible, vile shit that happens in these films. So, yeah, if you're likely to get offended by discussions of graphic nature, then yeah, I would suggest not listening to this show and kind of maybe coming back on a future show, because there's some really, really horrible shit that happens in these films, guys. Also, and this seems like a bit of a less pressing kind of concern, considering, you know, talking about free fake snuff movies, but there will obviously be a lot of spoilers on the show. Now, like I always say, while it's not a podcast where I'm going to spend the next hour telling you about every scene in the movie, obviously there are spoilers throughout, so be warned. Without further ado, I'm going to shut the fuck up now, and let's get on with the show. So here we go with the August Underground Trilogy. Enjoy. August Underground was directed by Fred Vogel and released in 2001. Now, who's Fred Vogel, you might ask? Though he's directed other films like Maskhead, The Final Interview, and Murder Collection Volume 1, none of which I've seen, incidentally. Vogel is most famous for the August Underground films. He's also an accomplished horror special effects artist. He was teaching at the Tom Savini Makeup School when he made the first August Underground film, and is the founder of Toe Tag Pictures, his production company, who released the August Underground films. I should also say that, unlike the character he plays in these films, he actually seems like a really cool guy in every interview that I've seen of his. Now, August Underground is one of the very first found footage films. Could spend ages talking about found footage, but the episode would be too long. So all you really need to know is that the first film to use the gimmick of video footage being found was Cannibal Holocaust. Now, though found footage seems to have been around for ages, it didn't really come fully into prominence until about 2007, when you had films like Wreck, Cloverfield, Diary of the Dead, and, of course, Paranormal Activity. But by 2001, the found footage genre, if you will, was only exemplified by one film, which is, of course, The Blair Witch Project. And The Blair Witch Project is still, in my opinion, one of the best found footage films out there. Now, that's not to say it's the best film that uses the found footage gimmick, but I think as a found footage film, it uses the gimmick the best, or one of the best anyway. The August Underground films are also examples of fake snuff movies, which are also found footage, but where the aim is to emulate real snuff, where people are actually killed on camera. One of the first films that used the fake snuff movie gimmick was Snuff, oddly enough, which is a video nasty and is fucking terrible, and I don't recommend it at all, but was promoted using the exploitation gimmick that the last 5 minutes featured someone being killed on camera for realsies. Obviously they weren't, but enough people were convinced to earn the film a level of notoriety that, quite frankly, it didn't deserve. Other famous examples are the Guinea Pig films, or at least the first two anyway, particularly Flower of Flesh and Blood, which has the very notorious story that Charlie Sheen was in his hotel room one day in the 80s, and he was flicking through the TV channels, Videodrome style, and he saw this man dressed as a samurai cutting a woman up for 30 minutes on one of the channels, so he assumed, oh fuck, this must be a real snuff movie, and he called the police, as you do. So, well done, Charlie. After Guinea Pig, other fake snuff films were made in Japan, like Tumbling Doll of Flesh, which I haven't seen, but it looks very similar to Flower of Flesh and Blood, quite frankly. And in America, like the American Guinea Pig films. But other than something like the last 15 minutes of Megan is Missing, there haven't been that many fake snuff films made since the mid-2000s, which, if you've seen any of these films, you'll understand why. So before I talk about August Underground, there are a couple of things I thought were interesting that I found from interviews with Fred Vogel. So the budget was apparently just $2,000, which you wouldn't really know from watching the film because of how realistic the effects look. And the idea was to use August Underground as a cheap film to raise money to make a zombie film, which is what Vogel wanted to really make as his first film at the time. But unfortunately, that didn't happen for various reasons. A lot of the movie was shot where Vogel was living at the time in Pennsylvania and features his brother, his cousin, and even his grandmother as some of the victims. From what Vogel said as well, the main influences on the film were Man Bites Dog, there's a scene where an old woman dies that reminded me of a similar scene in that film, and Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, particularly the home invasion scene. Vogel's also said he wasn't happy with the state of horror in the late 90s. I don't blame him. It was not the best time for horror, let's put it that way. And that he found films about serial killers to be weak, and they tried to make the serial killers likable, and they tried to make them cool, in inverted commas. So he wanted to make a more realistic horror film about serial killers. So as a result, he made August Underground. Now, it's normally at this point in the show that I would tell you what the story of August Underground is, but quite frankly, there is no story. All the story that there is very simple and limited. So basically, you've got two guys, one of whom is the man behind the camera recording everything that we see, played by Alan Peters, who also co-wrote the film, and his friend Peter, who's played by Fred Vogel himself. And it's essentially them torturing and killing various people and all the mundane stuff that they get up to when they're not doing that. So in the film, they torture a woman and kill her boyfriend, they harass and kill a hitchhiker, they kill an old woman, they go to a slaughterhouse for some reason. They go to a cemetery, again, for no real reason. At one point, they go to a concert, which is very late 90s, early 2000s new metal, and they get kicked out for getting into a fight. The band at this concert play a cover of Blind by Korn very badly, which was hilarious. It was my favourite part of the film by far. They terrorize people at a convenience store and they make them smell each other's asses. At one point, Fred Vogel's character gets a tattoo. They kill the tattoo artist, that's not very grateful, and his twin brother. Near the end, they grope two prostitutes for about what feels like 10 minutes, and then they kill one, although probably both of them, with a hammer. And yeah, that's pretty much it. Plot isn't this film's strong point, let's put it that way. But to be honest, if you go into this expecting a traditional film, you're going to be very disappointed. So, like I said, there's not really a plot to speak of. The narrative's completely non-linear, there's no character development. The only thing you can say, if you're being generous, is that Peter has body image issues, but that's it. Two main characters, ignoring the parts where they torture and kill people, are completely immature, they're obnoxious, they're sex-obsessed, and there's no point where they go on a voyage of self-discovery where they find themselves and they learn the error of their murderous ways. So let's put it this way, they're very unlikable. The victims also don't get any kind of backstory either, so that we can feel sympathy for their plight when they're being tortured. And there's no conflict between any of the main characters at any point. And this will annoy a lot of people, but there is no ending to speak of, at least not in the conventional sense. August Underground is closer, if anything, to an experimental film. It's transgressive. You know, I can't believe I'm going to make this comparison, but like someone like Andy Warhol, when he made his art films in the 1960s, like he would make, for example, something like Empire, which for those of you who don't know, is literally a static shot of the Empire State Building, which lasts for about 8 hours. Yep, it's just as exciting as it sounds. Or there's a film that he made called Sleep, which is literally a single shot of someone sleeping for hours, and there would be some thin artistic explanation for making a film like that. So, I don't know, he wanted to explore the human condition or something similar to that. Basically, like, I'm rambling, but what I'm trying to say is you have to take these films on their own terms. And Vogel wanted to make a film that was like a snuff film. So in a snuff film, there's no plot, there's no three-act structure, it's totally random. And the two main characters literally just torture and they kill and they dick around. And that's basically it, pretty much. We find nothing out about them, their motivations, their past, nothing like that. Which is, I guess, completely realistic. So in that sense, Vogel succeeded at what he was trying to do. But as a film, is it a good film or not? Well, main thing that people talk about in the film is how realistic the gore effects are and how people thought, similar to Cannibal Holocaust, that the film was real and people were actually being killed. Vogel mentioned that the effects are all self-contained, there's no cutaways, and so the special effects, when you do see them, are really good. They look very effective, they don't look fake. But what I will say is there's not actually as much gore in this film as you'd expect, considering one, Vogel's job is as a effects makeup artist, and two, considering how the reputation of this film suggests, well, you know, it's a fake snuff movie and it's really vile, so it must be really, really violent. Similar to the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the way we perceive the film is to be much more violent and visceral than it actually is. So when we see things like a nipple that's been cut off, or a man in a bath who's been castrated, or a guy who's had his leg cut off, you know, we don't actually see those things happen. We only see the after effects. The most that we kind of, you know, experience as an audience is we hear the boyfriend being dismembered in a bath. But again, we don't see it. All we see is Fred Vogel's character throwing up in a toilet, which tells us as an audience everything we need to know. Ironically, one of the goriest scenes in the film, if anything, is when Fred Vogel managed to accidentally bust his brother's forehead open in the convenience store scene, by accident. And there's a couple of scenes involving a hammer, which I guess, you know, is pretty brutal. I mean, any scene where you're smashing someone's head in with a hammer is going to be nothing but brutal. But like I said, other than that, it's pretty much it. And a lot of the violence is off screen. And the torture scenes are more psychological than anything like, I don't know, pulling people's guts out and all that kind of stuff, which would come later in the series. So this film, in a way, is a very kind of early film in the torture porn cycle of films. Torture porn didn't really exist in 2001, and I'm not going to claim that this is somehow this super influential film or anything like that, because quite frankly, I don't think it is. But it's interesting that this came out, and then you had the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake, and then you had House of a Thousand Corpses and Hostel and Saw and films like that not too long after that. So in comparison to those films, the tortures themselves, they're not physical, they're more psychological. The worst thing we see, if anything, is the woman at the beginning of the film who's tied up having her own shit rubbed on her. Like, most people can relate to this way more than having their leg cut off. And the entertainment that the cameraman gets from tormenting this poor woman is what makes it disturbing. Which brings me to what I find most interesting about the film, though, which is the camera work and the character's relationship to the camera itself. So, similar to the Blair Witch Project, the quality of the footage has been deliberately degraded in post-production and then via video-to-video transfer several times. Anyone who's old enough to remember video can tell you that, you know, by the time you've copied something two or three times, the quality of the footage does drastically go down, and this adds to the realistic nature of the film by making it look like home video footage someone would have shot. And what this does is it conceals certain makeup effects to make them look more realistic. What I would also say, and this again goes back to the Blair Witch Project, is what the Blair Witch Project does really well, and people completely misinterpret this, is when you watch the film, you go, okay, well, it's not filmed that well, and the framing isn't very good, and, you know, it's moving a lot, camera's kind of jerky. And I'd say to that, well, it's meant to be footage that's filmed by a non-professional cameraman, so obviously it's going to look like that. And that's the point. It adds to the realism of what you're watching. And, you know, the problem I've got with a lot of found footage films that are made now is they look too professional and too clean. So August Underground also has that same non-professional look as the Blair Witch Project. Like, one thing I noticed when I was watching August Underground for the show is that the framing, a lot of what's shot is kind of too close to the actors' faces and bodies, which I guess adds to the claustrophobic nature of the film as well, which I thought worked really well. And, you know, given this is meant to be a snuff movie, having it shot that way feels much more authentic than if it was shot professionally, if that makes sense. And also, I liked how there are no opening credits for this or any of the three films in the trilogy. And that, again, adds to the authenticity of what we're watching. Also, in this film, compared to the sequels, the perspective is always from the point of view of the cameraman. I find this more consistent than the other films in the series, as to me, they fall victim to the "why are these people still filming" trope, which a lot of found footage films suffer from, and it really kind of breaks the suspension of disbelief. I think that one of the main reasons that people get uncomfortable watching this film is because our point of view is the same as the cameraman. We never see what he looks like. Never really involves himself in the murders because Peter does all the actual killing and dismembering, and he just watches and laughs and kind of just eggs him on. It's interesting that during the long scene with the prostitutes, he's more interested in Peter getting laid than having sex himself. Interestingly, we also never find out the reason why these characters are filming themselves, which makes it different to a film like Zero Day, for example, where the recording is being done as a video diary. The film may be influenced by Natural Born Killers, and in influence, Vogel has mentioned reality TV and the idea that anyone could be famous becoming more of a thing in 1999 and 2000. It was the turn of the millennium and all that. But to me, something that's truer as to why they're filming is boredom. Like, young people who live in the middle of nowhere don't have a lot of entertainment options, so they often end up involved in these antisocial activities. So, for example, you'll see in this film, like, where Peter gets thrown out of the gig for fighting, or when they harass the man at the convenience store. Now, I'm not suggesting that all young people in small towns who are bored are going to resort to things like sadism and murder in real life, and it's not really explained in the film how they've reached that point. If you're being generous, you could argue that them filming themselves a lot, as they do, predicts something like social media and how people are now obsessed with documenting their lives for everyone to see. in a way like how Hitchcock said that drama was life with the dull bits cut out, except in this case, August Underground would be drama with some of the dull bits cut out and some of them left in for dramatic effect, which is interesting because a lot of people who hate this film hate it because they find it meandering, they find it really boring, and there are parts of the film that I think are there to deliberately be boring, quite frankly. I don't mind the pacing myself, but it does really drag, I would say, after the first 20 minutes. Now, obviously, you have to bear in mind that the film's been edited in a way that a snuff movie would be, and that the film is only 71 minutes long. So it doesn't take too much of your time, and it doesn't really linger too long on the torture scenes, which is a huge problem later on in the series. So as a result, they're more impactful. You can tell as well that a lot of the scenes were done as one take or as close to that as possible, which I think works really well. I liked how the transitions between each scene were abrupt, like they would be in an actual home movie. So, for example, after the police start following them after they leave a convenience store, it just cuts and goes to the next day, and we never find out what happened. So the technical aspects of the editing were very, very on point in adding to the realism. The acting's less on point. A couple of the performances, especially the performance of the convenience store clerk, were very bad. Like, we're talking like horrendously, horrendously bad. And Vogel and Peters, they're convincing, I would say, but more so as douchebags, like less as over-the-top psychopaths. But, you know, maybe I'm being a bit too critical because, you know, let's face it, no one watches a film like August Underground for the quality of its acting performances. However, and this is, I would say, a good way to round up everything that I've been talking about. So I've just spent the last 15 minutes letting you guys know everything that I thought, you know, August Underground did quite well, and that Fred Vogel, he wanted to make a fake snuff movie that was authentic and it showed serial killers for how they really are without glamorizing them. And to that end, you know what? He succeeded. But ultimately, and this is the glaringly huge problem with a film like this, what's the point? So like Andy Warhol making an 8-hour movie of the Empire State Building, just because you can make a film like this doesn't mean that you should. It's like a reductio ad absurdum where Vogel, he didn't like serial killer movies, so he made a movie where people get tortured and killed for no reason, and that's it for the whole film. Like, don't worry about anyone in the film who's being tortured because they don't matter. Which begs the question, why should I care? Like, there are disturbing movies that have plots and characters with actual motivations that you can rewatch over and over again. Like, even a film like Megan is Missing, which I don't think is a very good film at all, it's got a powerful last 15 minutes because it's got a story and it's got a kind of likeable lead character. The two main characters in this are basically the school bully and his mate, now a few years older. Now, I'm not saying your main characters have to be likable people. The one example that I normally go to for this argument is Taxi Driver, where Travis Bickle is not really a likable person, but he's played by Robert De Niro, and Robert De Niro is one of the greatest actors of all time. And even though Travis Bickle isn't necessarily a nice guy, he has limits. Hence, you know, the last few minutes of that film. In August Underground, though, these characters have no limits. And like I said at the start, you don't learn anything about either of them, literally nothing. They could be anyone. So in that regard, what is the point of watching a film like this? In fact, what even is the point of a film like this? Like, if you want to see people being killed for real, you can find all that on the internet. So why would you want to watch a fake version of that? It's all very kind of, yeah, redundant and meaningless. And I know there are going to be people who are listening to this who love these kind of films, and they can watch these films over and over and over again. You know what? If you're one of those people, then you know what? Fair fucks to you, man. You do you, fam. But, like, I need something more than that in my films, even the really disturbing ones. So as much as there were aspects of this that I really liked and I actually thought were quite good, even for a found footage film, I can never see myself wanting to watch this ever again, which is a shame because it had a lot, you know, as I said, it had a lot of good qualities. But yeah, it's just a very meaningless experience. Now, with that out of the way, I've got a brand new segment of the show for you guys, where I ask the question, August Underground, how bad is it? This is the part of the show where I'm going to rank how bad a date movie every film that I review on the show is, from good to not that bad, to bad, to very bad, and finally, the worst. So, August Underground, it's a fake snuff movie. Given everything that I've just told you about the film, it can be nothing other than the worst. Because, yeah, it's a fake snuff movie. As I said, I mean, even though I've told you, you know, it's not actually as violent as maybe that its reputation suggests, it's still a fake snuff movie. Like, why would you want to watch this on a date? Are you fucking mental or something? Like, no, don't watch it. It's the worst. I'm not even going to debate this. It just is the worst. I'm sorry. So that's what I think about August Underground. But what do the fine people of Letterboxd think about it? So let's find out in a brand new segment that in dedication to my good friend, Tom Dennett Cook, I'm calling Reviews from the Outer Rim. So the first review is from Jacob, and it says, August Underground is a mean, mean movie. It might be even meaner than August Underground Penance, the latter certainly being more extreme, but the original August Underground has it beat on pure hate. The two main characters perpetuate torture and death upon anyone who strikes their fancy to bring the mouth of Hades to. There's no storyline involved, just two dicks with their camera. There's never any explanation as to why the characters in this situation are filming, but whatever, getting their jollies by destroying people's lives. What makes August Underground notable isn't so much how dirty it feels, you can watch Pink Flamingos and feel just as dirty, but how suffocating the camera's presence is. It doesn't present the perpetrators in any light other than what they are. It doesn't attempt to only present the glamour of their actions, and it kind of does the opposite. We get about as many scenes of the perps complaining about the smell and vomiting the toilet than we get of them slapping people around. Like most serial killer type movies present antagonists that are godlike. How do you kill Freddy Krueger? How do you get rid of a Jason? They're villains that create their own reality because nobody can stop them. They have no weaknesses. You'd never see them stooped over a toilet because of the smell from cutting off a dead person's limb, right? So August Underground is presenting serial killers that feel devastatingly human. These are guys that feel like assholes you went to school with. It's not hard to imagine your after-school bully acting like these guys act as he laughed about knocking your books out of your arm, except these guys laughing about people they have tied up in their basement. Despite being a movie that isn't traditionally scary, and I agree with that, there's no thumping in the dark as protagonist's eyes dart back and forth. This movie, more than any other, might affect how I view people in the real world. Because even something as simple as these two guys walking into a chintzy roadside attraction made me afraid for the people inside. And they're just walking around making crude jokes and doing absolutely nothing, but it's unnerving because of what we've seen them be capable of. And now, whenever I go to a place that the public goes, I see two 20-somethings laughing and acting like dicks. I'm going to be like, are these guys out there to beat whoever up for no reason and all other than their own amusement? And it will be a valid question. That is the power of August Underground. Second review is from Sally Jane Black. It's quite a very well-known sort of reviewer on Letterboxd, and this is what it says. The most I can say for this is that the cameraman is an effectively portrayed invisible character. He seems real, his camera focusing on his perverse fixations rather than, well, anything else. He spends a lot of time focused on women's chests. He's not a filmmaker, he's a mentally disturbed person going on a killing spree with his serial killer friend. He isn't interested in high-quality video, he isn't interested in framing and composition, he's interested in his sick titillation, and he remains focused on it the entire time. I almost threw up once, which is sort of a badge this movie can wear, I suppose. I can't imagine Fred Vogel isn't proud of this. He's the sort of person who makes this kind of film takes pride in it. Apparently his primary trade is in makeup and effects. And there are times when this film feels like a highlight reel, especially when they focus repeatedly on certain things, like the missing nipple, for instance. While it's partly characterization for our twisted cameraman, it's also clearly a quiet brag about how impressive it looks in low fidelity video. So it succeeds in transgression, but it has no statement, no soul, no value. You either watch with nauseated awe or you turn it off. And quite frankly, I couldn't agree any more than that. And that's pretty much all I have to say on the first film. 2 years later, in 2003, Vogel made August Underground's Mordom. Now, this time, the film isn't just directed by Fred Vogel, it's also co-directed by Vogel, the other three lead actors in the film, and Jeremy Cruz, who works for Toe Tag Pictures with Vogel. I believe he does a lot of the gore effects for them, so it's more of a collaboration this time. Alan Peters, who played the cameraman in the first film, didn't return for this one, as according to interviews, he was worried about what being in August Underground would do to his career, as he had a family, which is fair enough. Now, as weird as this is going to sound, I actually missed his presence from this film. Not only was his character the single point of view, as I mentioned earlier, but he was actually scary. He was a counterpoint to Peter in that he just seemed to want to have a laugh, and his friend happened to enjoy killing and torturing people. Instead, in this one, we have, in effect, three Peters, which is one of the many problems I have with this film. So the story of this one is basically the same as the last one, except with one key difference. Instead of there being two killers, there are now three killers. The plot is also the same in that you've got scenes of torture, and then you've got scenes where the main characters are messing around or going to gigs. There's another terrible new metal gig in this film, you'd be pleased to know. Now, because there are more characters, it gets a bit more complicated. There's a love triangle in this film, of sorts, if you want to call it that. Vogel's character, who is now credited with the awesome name Peter Mountain, I have no idea how they came up with that or chose the name Peter Mountain, but it's absolutely amazing. He now has a girlfriend called Krusty, played by Christy Wiles, and her character has a brother called Maggot, played by Michael Todd Schneider. Literally, the first 2 or 3 minutes of this film is Peter and Krusty arguing and shouting at each other, him calling her every name in the big book of Vince Russo insults. He calls her a bitch, he calls her a slut, and he calls her a whore. And the reason for that is it turns out that she's having sex with her brother, and Peter is not happy about it. So it's like Jerry Springer. And that's just how the movie starts. So imagine what the rest of the film is like. Compared to the last film, it's got the same kind of multi-generation VHS look from the first movie that I thought worked really well. Gore effects are really effective again, and it's definitely convincing as a fake snuff movie in that it's got no opening credits, it's got the abrupt transitions between scenes, etc. again, and while there's no great acting here, the performances are certainly committed, I will say that much. Those are the sole positives I have to say about this film. Everything else you're going to hear from this point is going to be pretty much negative. So, this is not a very pleasant film to watch, which I guess is the point. I think what Vogel and everyone who made the film must have done is, I imagine they took a look at August Underground, they said, you know what, let's do that again, but more. So pretty much everything in this film is excessive to the nth degree, so it's gorier, it's about a million times nastier, which is hard to believe, given the last film, but unfortunately that comes with other issues. So the two main characters in the last film, they were complete psychopaths, but you know what? They got on, they never argued, and they were just having a grand old time torturing and killing people. And this one, like I said, the first 3 minutes of the film, it's just characters shouting at each other. You know, I thought I'd accidentally put on a Rob Zombie film by mistake. Literally, from the word go, you're just really annoyed by the characters, and that's the worst thing that you can do in any film. It happens a few times later on as well, at which point I just wanted the film to stop so I didn't have to watch it anymore. The only character in the film I didn't hate was a fourth killer, who's played by Killjoy from the band Necrophagia, but he was only in the film for about 15 minutes. To be honest, the only part of the film that I thought was funny was after Killjoy murdered a woman, incidentally played by Fred Vogel's wife. He's sat at his desk and it looks like he's working on what appears to be an Excel spreadsheet. And Peter's like, oh, you know, hi, you know, can we hang out with you some more? Can I keep in touch? Which I thought was actually surprisingly wholesome for a movie like this. And it amused me to no end. Anyway, another film that I thought, which was a massive downgrade, was how this one was filmed. So in the first film, though it's not professionally filmed, obviously, you could see what was going on, at the very least. Like, you're not going to get motion sickness watching it, whereas this one, you definitely are going to get motion sickness. There are huge sections of this film where the camera is literally just moving around and swirling around for no fucking reason whatsoever. And it's hard to focus on anything that's going on because the camera keeps moving. Like, I had flashbacks to when I was watching The Ghastly Ones and The Lament Configuration. I was just like, why is the camera moving all the time? Just keep the camera still, Jesus Christ. And there are also whole sections of the film which are too dark and you can't see anything that's going on. It's just horrendous, and that adds to the tedious of watching this film, because it's a fucking boring film to watch. It's so boring, and it's hard for me to say that about a film which has some of the most horrendous things that you will ever see in any film. Like, the worst thing about the film for me is a section about halfway into the film that lasts, and I shit you not, 20 minutes, where the three killers have just got these two, they've got these two lesbian women captured, and they torture them for forever. and they get vomited on, they get sexually assaulted, they get spat on, like, all this stuff is happening, and it's just so boring. Like, after a while, you just go, all right, great, you know, I've seen enough of this now, and it's not that I'm offended or disgusted by what's going on, it's just tedium. You know, I just want them to get the fuck on with it and just move on with the rest of the film. And again, like the last film, there's no character motivation at all. Although, having said that, compared to the first film, there's at least some sort of character motivation with the whole incest film. And yeah, like Peter, he's not very happy about that. But as the film goes on, Maggot gets more and more deranged and he's totally jealous of Peter, I guess. I don't know. Like, that's pretty much it as far as story goes. Look, now, to be honest, I get the only reason to watch this is because of how fucked up it is, literally. And I feel like I'm wasting my time even going into any kind of detail about, like, well, you know, the lighting's not great. And the production design is, well, actually, now that I mention it, the production design, very scuzzy. Like, there are many scenes which take place in dirty places with maggots and they look filthy. And, like, I can't imagine what it must have been like to film in these places. These are the dirtiest locations I've ever seen in any film. It's just horrible. Like, absolutely horrendous. But yeah, going back to what I was saying, like, all kinds of shit happens in this film. Like, I'm just going to preempt this now. Like, in terms of how bad the film is, like, this is the worst, by far, as a date movie. Like, I might have to break my own scale already. This is just film two. Like, it's not just the worst, it's the absolute worst. Now, this film might as well just be a checklist of the most disgusting things that have appeared on film ever. So, we already covered, we've got incest, we've got two scenes of self-harm, you've got maggot eating, and, you know, in any film where you've got torture, you're going to have usual kind of sexual abuse, degradation, there's rape, there's vomit. More vomit. Yeah, excellent stuff. So I had flashbacks to when I did the Vomit Gore trilogy at this point. And it's real vomit, incidentally. So Lisa for Valentine would be super turned on by this film. Also, there seem to be a lot of shots of male genitals in this film, which, yeah, make of that what you will. But the worst things that happen in the film, by far, and I really apologise if you get upset by anything that I'm about to say, because what I'm going to... Well, everything that I'm going to say is pretty vile. I'm not going to lie. So you've got a guy, he's naked in a box-like structure, and he's coerced, shall we say, to cut off his dick with a really small pair of scissors, and then his severed dick gets different things done with it that I'm not going to go into here, but let's just say they were really, really horrible. So at this point, I regretted having a dick, let's put it that way. So that's one. Going back to the lesbians from earlier, one of them gets killed. They cut open her stomach, pull out her guts, and then Maggot has sex with her in the slit where her guts were. So he's literally gut-fucking her dead body. Yeah, that happened. Then later in the film, you've got a shed with all these dead bodies in it, one of whom is a maggot-covered dead baby with no head. And then speaking of dead kids, the worst thing that happens in the film, by far, very sorry for this one, everyone, is you've got necrophilia. So it's Maggot again. He's having sex with a dead body, but not only is it a dead body, it's a dead child's body. So it's not just necrophilia, it's necropedophilia. Yeah. Not really a lot that you can say after something like that, to be honest. So, yeah, quite frankly, if you want to watch a film that's legitimately one of the worst date movies of all time, just watch this, because it's right up there. It's right up there with the Vomit Gore films or Cannibal Holocaust or any of those kind of films. Because is it a good film? No way. Fuck that. It is not a good film in any way, shape or form. Like, the only people who are going to get anything out of a film like this are people who are into really disturbing films. I mean, really, like I said, it's just so boring. And like the first film, which, by the way, may as well be Citizen Kane in comparison to this, you're going to be asking yourself, what's the point of me watching this? It's just so pointless. Like, there's no purpose to this whatsoever. You could argue, you know, with the first one, they were trying to make something that felt like a legitimate snuff movie. But with this one, it's got nothing to it other than how disturbing can we make this film? What's the furthest that we can do to make this film just the most disturbing thing ever? And they went out, and you know what? They did it. And hey, if that's what you're into, again, that's cool, man. But as a film, this is no fun to watch. I didn't get any enjoyment out of this whatsoever. The only reason to watch it is to say that you've watched one of the worst date movies of all time. And that's basically it. Not recommended from me whatsoever. And this one, it's not a, well, I don't recommend it, and that's a shame. It's a, I just don't recommend it. It's got nothing going for it whatsoever, apart from sheer depravity. And if I go to reviews and Out of Rim from this one, you can only imagine what Letterboxd had to say about it. In fact, there was a review I chose which pretty much sums up what I think about the film. It's quite a long one, so only one review this time. It's by a guy called Matt. It says, I spent much of my teenage years and beyond watching horror movies, starting with the standard stuff from a local video shop years before I was meant to see it, onto getting hold of NTSC copies of then still banned in the UK classics like The Exorcist and The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. Then DVD came along, and multi-region players and internet ordering and pretty much anything was available, and I joined extreme cinema from around the world. But even now, as more liberal attitudes see pretty much everything available, there are some things that you'll have a hard time finding. This one is probably illegal to own in the UK. I don't think it's received any kind of heavily cut release here, and the uncut version is the nastiest thing I've ever seen and likely to fall foul of obscenity laws. Yeah, just, you know, interjection from me. Yes, I agree with this. It's never likely to be released uncut in any way, shape or form in this country. No way. Anyway, back to the review. That's not something I say lightly. But the thing that really tips it over the edge is that there isn't a point to the film other than to be horrendous. There is no plot, there is no narrative. There aren't even scenes in between the nasty bits, it's just wall-to-wall torture porn. The premise is that it's found footage from a group of incestuous serial killers, so the camera flicks on and somebody is fucking their sister. That scene plays out, and it just jumps to a crack house raid and someone being beaten to death with a hammer. These aren't killers interested in telling their story, this isn't Mickey and Mallory Knox on a whirlwind adventure of murder, this is a private recording of horrible shit to go back and relive again and again. In a way, you have to give credit, if there were fan footage of a bunch of incestuous serial killers, it would probably be just like this, albeit without the bad actors. Unfortunately though, if you're not after the vicarious pleasure of reliving disgusting crimes, all you're left with is an oppressive, sickening episode of America's Least Funny Home Videos. I got nothing from watching this. As a long-term watcher of extreme cinema, I expected gore. I hoped for some kind of social commentary. Good luck with that. But mostly just wanted something that pushed the boundaries of the horror movies I'd seen before. But not only is this not in the same ballpark, it's not in the same league or the same fucking sport. It did achieve something that very rarely happens. I turned it off. Honestly felt like I shouldn't be watching it, that there was absolutely nothing positive that could come from me giving it any more of my time. The scene that really pushed me over the edge involved a couple who had been captured and kept tied up in the loft. The man was forced to cut his own penis off with some nail scissors, or else the killers were going to rape his wife with a knife. This was shown in graphic, realistic detail and seen through the eyes of people that are really, really enjoying it happening. I've seen some fucked up things in movies, but that's about as bad as it gets. It's presented as something brilliant. Even as I type it, I feel like my life is worse for having endured it. I guess you only really know your limits when you exceed them, so thanks for letting me know I do have limits. I'm tempted to not admit to having seen this, but instead, I rate this as a warning to you all. Turn back before it's too late. And I can't put it any better than that. Which brings us to the last film in the series, August Underground's Penance, which came out in 2007. This one, while it still follows the same formula as the other two films, is somewhat different in that it has actual character progression, which neither of the previous two films had at all. And it also has a story, which is that Peter and Krusty, returning from the last film, are still in a relationship. They're still killing lots of people, and they're still recording most of what they're doing. Difference is, this time, is all the murder, rape, and torture is having a negative effect on both of them, and it's hurting their relationship. Now, as you can imagine, this being an August Underground film, it does this in a really fucked up way, but thankfully there's nothing as horrible as the worst parts of the last film. So, the biggest difference between this and the other two films is the way the film looks. In this one, they haven't used any post-production effects to make the footage seem like it was filmed on an old camcorder. The picture quality is very clear, so you can really see everything that's going on, which is a huge upgrade from the last film. Another thing that helped is there really wasn't a lot of shaky cam in this one. There were even parts where the person filming put the camera down. So on the whole, there weren't any points in the film where I didn't know what was going on, which was great. That being said, whereas the other films felt like actual videos someone found, this film feels like I'm just watching a generic found footage film. By that, I mean the characters are filming because they have to for the story they're telling to work. There are definitely scenes in the second half of the film where there's no real reason for them to be filming. I mean, there's a scene where Krusty's at a gig and some random guy takes her to a back room and they have very rough, violent sex and she's just filming it while he's fucking her. And this guy doesn't seem to be that bothered that he's being filmed. Like, it's all very strange. So, yeah, the found footage aspect of the film gets, shall we say, stretched beyond plausibility at times, especially near the end of the film. However, as far as the pacing goes, this one is, I would say, more mature than the first two films. None of the scenes felt like they went on too long, which was definitely a problem in the last film, as I said, and the first really violent scene in this film doesn't take place until 20 minutes in, and barring the Christmas scene in the middle, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, the film doesn't get really intense until the last 15 minutes. In a way, though, I would say this film feels like a return to the first August Underground film, in that you've got Fred Vogel's sole director again, two writers, Vogel and Christy Wiles, and Vogel and one other person editing the film. Now, in comparison, like I said, Morden had five directors, but also five different writers and four editors, which, let's just say, is a bit excessive. So one of the problems that I had with Morden, aside from the, well, many problems that I mentioned earlier, is that the film is just very incoherent. Like, there's loads of random shit happening, and that's because you've got different scenes being filmed by different people, and they all have got their own style, so it's very hard to follow. Now, on one hand, you can say, well, you know what, it's an interesting experiment to make a film that's meant to be a snuff movie, and, you know, filmed by different people, and maybe it's just more realistic to do it that way. But that didn't work for me, quite frankly. In Penance, you've got half your scenes filmed by Vogel, and the other half by Wiles. So while it's not like the first film, which was only filmed by one person, it's a lot easier to follow than the last film. So, you know, thank heaven for small mercies on that one, because that film was mental. And one of the main examples of this is the Christmas scene that I just mentioned, which technically, if you think about it, makes August Underground's Penance a Christmas movie, which you can watch alongside Die Hard, Santa with Muscles, and all your other festive favourites. Now, in this scene, Peter and Krusty invade this family's home, they kill the dad, they kill and they try and rape the mum, and then in the most shocking part of this scene, they kill the daughter. And it's clearly meant to be homage to a similar scene that takes place in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer that I mentioned right near the start of the show, which, for anyone who hasn't seen it, you've got Henry and Otis invading a family's home, they kill them, and then afterwards you see all them watching a video they've recorded of themselves committing the murders. And this scene in Penance is clearly meant to invoke that, although obviously it was done better in Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer for reasons that I'll go into a little bit later on. This scene does work very well, though. It's got a realistic feel because we can see everything play out in one take, and to be honest, I thought it was probably the best thing in the film. It's the only part of the film that is uncomfortable to watch because, you know, it is all one take. It doesn't cut away from the action. There's also not much gore in the scene, which makes it a lot more effective in the way the first film was. And yeah, obviously you've got a child being strangled to death, which is obviously going to make people uncomfortable who are watching it. But in terms of the rest of the gore in the film, bar one exception, it's mostly the same old shit you get in the other two August Underground films. The only difference this time is you can actually see what's going on, which is great when, you know, for example, you've got someone getting their guts pulled out and you can see the guts coming out in horrific detail and you can hear all the squidgy sounds they make. But other than that, like I said, it's the same old shit. Like, you've got people's limbs being cut off, you've got people's heads being cut off, you know, you've got people's throats being slit and blood drinking and hammers, obviously. And, you know, the only part that you could say is somewhat upsetting is a scene where a woman's having a baby cut out of her stomach, which, don't get me wrong, it's bad and it looks like a real baby, but it's just so over the top that it becomes ridiculous. Like, I may as well be watching Anthropophagus the Beast, but at least in Anthropophagus, when the beast is pulling the baby out of the woman's stomach, he eats it. And at that point, you can just kind of laugh because it's so ridiculous. And also because clearly it didn't look like a baby. I think it was a rabbit carcass. But other than that, the effects by Jeremy Cruise are impressive considering how low the budget of the film is. But I will say, though, is, as horrible as everything I've just said sounds, when you've just watched something as absolutely horrendous and vile as the last film, I've got to be honest, I was very desensitized to all the gore in this film. Especially as, when I do these shows, when I have to watch more than one film, I tend to watch them one after the other. And when you do that, and you get this far in, it's just like, okay, great, you know, more people dying, more people getting their limbs cut off, more torture, more blood. You know, even when you're dealing with things like a dead baby, it's difficult to care after a while. But after the dead baby is the main part of the film that people tend to talk about, which is the last 15 and 20 minutes of the film. So, like I said, first round of the film is kind of your standard August Underground film. You got people messing around, and then you got people being tortured, and you got people being killed. And there's even another gig, like I mentioned earlier, this one being Southern Rock, so not new metal, which I guess is a shame, depending on how you look at things. But yeah, as I mentioned at the start of the film, relationship between Peter and Krusty is getting worse as the film goes on because of all the murder. It's not as obvious as it could be, but that is what's meant to be happening. So in the Christmas scene, Peter tries to rape the mother of the family, but he can't get an erection and he gets frustrated by that. And that happens, I think, a couple of times in the film. Then you've got the dead baby, which upsets Krusty. And then at this point, not gonna lie, the film gets very weird. So she's upset by this dead baby, so Peter rapes her. Now, haven't mentioned this, but there's a lot of rape in these films. Way too much. It's just easy shock value, I guess. But yeah, considering how short these films are, there's way too much rape per capita, I guess, if you want to think of it like that. But yeah, and then in the last 10 minutes, you've got return of shouting, because like at the start of the last film, you've got Peter and Krusty shouting at each other. Krusty telling Peter she hates him over and over and over again, him calling her a bitch and a slut and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm guessing these parts are going to be ad-libbed. Like, I doubt it was properly scripted word for word, which is probably okay for this type of film because it's meant to feel spontaneous. But yeah, it got repetitive very quickly. And then at the end of the film, you've got this random naked woman who's tied up. And Peter, like, masturbates and comes and he rubs his semen over her, and Krusty gets really upset by this tied up woman being naked, and she kills her, which, yeah. And then after she kills her, she then has this realization that, oh yeah, I probably shouldn't have killed this woman. Like, I'm really sorry for doing that. And it's like she realized suddenly that everything she's been doing is completely wrong, and then she commits suicide by choking herself to death somehow. And yeah, it just ends, which is a bit weird, I guess, and out of nowhere. But yeah, I mean, that's pretty much everything you need to know about the film. Now, in comparison to the other two films, I'd say this one, it looks better. You can see everything that's going on because there's less camera movement. Visual effects are more clear, and yeah, you can tell they made some kind of attempt to give these characters depth, but that's a problem in and of itself. Now, you might say, Greg, you know, what are you talking about, man? Why is it a problem to give these characters depth? Is that they really should have had depth in the first place. Like, if you were going to do a trilogy. Like, if we compare this to Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, the reason that film works better than this one is Henry, though he kills people, there's a limit to what he will and won't do. So you've got him, and then you've got Otis, who's got no limits. And because of that, there's conflict, because there's certain things that Otis does or wants to do, and Henry won't let him. And we know Henry's a dangerous man. So that's, you know, works much better than in this film, for example, where, well, in fact, all three of the films, really, where it's just people egging each other on to do worse and worse and worse stuff, and everyone's just laughing and having a grand old time, and there's just no drama at all. Now, I get some people are going to say, listen to this, well, hang on a minute, isn't it really annoying when you've got a character going, oh, why are you killing these people? Don't do that. This is wrong, guys. And I get that these are meant to be snuff films, and in a real snuff movie, you wouldn't have a character who would basically be the moral compass of the film. But yeah, watching films like this is just, it's a very hollow experience. Like, we're watching these people kill for no reason, and that's it. That's all these films are, and this is the first of these films where any one of the main characters shows any remorse for what they've done, and it's literally, what, 2 minutes from the end of the third film in a trilogy? So what's the point in that? It's just completely meaningless. And even though they tried more with the story in Penance, it's still unclear what's actually going on. Like, in preparation for this, I saw a behind-the-scenes documentary where Fred Vogel was being, like, really proper defensive about people saying, like, oh, you know, people say the August Underground films, they don't have a story, but all three films have a story, man. Like, these people are being completely unfair. Now, the first film doesn't have a story. I'm sorry, it really doesn't. Like, I defy anyone to tell me what the story of the first one is. And Mordom does have a story, but that story is just man is angry with girlfriend for having sex with her brother, and brother is jealous of him. And that's it. I mean, good luck getting any kind of feature-length film out of that, really. And then you come to this film, which, like I said, it does have a story, but the storytelling is not great. Like, there's certain things that don't really add up when you're watching it. Like, obviously I mentioned that it's about a relationship in decline, but really the decline is not super obvious until the end of the film. So, like, they seem to be having a good old time, and then in the last 20 minutes, all of a sudden, they don't have a good time anymore, which is a bit weird. And the point that triggers that doesn't really make sense either. So, like, Krusty gets upset after seeing this baby. But why is she upset after seeing this woman and the baby? Now, we can assume that maybe at some point in her past she had a miscarriage of some sort, but we're not told that as an audience. So why do we need to guess what's happened in order for that to make sense? And what happened to Maggot? Like, if you're going to make sequels with characters from previous films, you need to give the audience some reason to stay invested who've watched the previous films. Like, I assume Peter killed Maggot at the end of Mordom, but no one really says anything. And what happened to the cameraman from the first film? Like, did he get arrested? Did he die? Did he have a change of heart and Peter killed him? I mean, what happened to him? Like, you know, throw us a bone, guys. Like, throw us a bone, Fred. Like, what the fuck, man? And I guess the most annoying thing about all this that just sums up everything that I've said for the last few minutes is, you know what, I still don't feel like I know anything about Peter Mountain apart from his awesome name. Like, the only thing I got from the three films is he may have had a bad relationship with his dad, and he has body issues. Now, first film, I get it's meant to be a snuff movie, so you can get away with not telling us anything about any of the characters. That's fine, forgive you that one. But when you've got the same main character in three films, you kind of need to do a bit more, you know, than just have him just there killing people. Like, we need to know a bit more about him. Like, who is he? What motivates him? What's he think? Tell us about his family life. Like, tell us anything about him. Like, in any kind of film with sequels, you do kind of, even in crappy, like, film series, they do kind of give you, like, more kind of backstory for your main character. Now, a lot of the time, that's for the worse. But in this, it's like, you know, we kind of need a bit more than just, you know, people being killed and tortured for three films, because it gets a bit redundant after a while. Like, in, you know, in interviews, like, Vogel's, he brings up classic disturbing films. I've mentioned a couple of them, like, you know, Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, Man Bites Dog, Cannibal Holocaust, Last House on Dead End Street. But those films, they had character development. It wasn't just wall-to-wall kind of cruelty and messing around. It was, they had, like, actual stories and stuff. So, yeah, to be honest, if he just made the first film and left it at that, then I wouldn't have said any of what I've said for the last kind of 5 minutes or so. But because there are three films, and you're going to ask me to spend the better part of 4 hours of my life watching your films, you better give me something worth my time. And if there is more to these stories and characters that I'm missing, then it's your fault for not telling us. You know, don't blame us for your bad storytelling if we don't get it. You know, I'm sorry, but that's, things like this really annoy me. So anyway, I apologise if I'm going on a bit of a rant. Anyway, on the whole, in terms of what I think about this film, I would say Penance is better than Mordom. The only people who won't think that are people who liked Mordom because it was really fucked up. Not that Penance isn't fucked up, but Mordom was a lot more shameless in doing stuff just for the sake of shocking people and being sick just for the sake of it. But it's still not a great film. I mean, I guess from a filmmaking perspective, maybe it's better than the other two, but it feels pointless. I don't really, yeah, it didn't really need to exist. But then again, neither did the other two, but hey. And in terms of, like, how bad is it? Again, it's a fake snuff movie, so I have to put it as the worst. So this is a film series where all three films are free of, like, the worst eight movies ever. It's not as bad as Mordom, but it's still a fake snuff movie. You've still got women being raped. You've got, you know, the baby being cut out of her stomach. You've got the whole Christmas scene, which in itself makes it a very, very bad date movie altogether. Yeah, it's, again, it's the worst. There isn't really a lot of discussion to be had on films like this. It's just, we all know, like, anyone who's, you know, listening to this now, I know why you're listening to this, because these films are really, really fucked up and you want to know what I think about them. Like, they're all horrible. There's no one listening to this who doesn't think that these films are anything other than, like, the worst possible movies that you could watch on a date. Like, it is, yeah, quite frankly, ridiculous that I'm even talking about this at this point. So moving on quickly to reviews from the Outer Rim. I've got two reviews for this one. This one is by Cerulean Citrone. And says, this is Fred Vogel's favourite of the three, and I can see why. It's not as gory or mean-spirited as its predecessors. Instead, it further explores the dysfunctional couple as we see their killing spree slowly come to an end. While the first one is the best of them, Penance is definitely the one with most depth. All three films drag, but are never really boring. This one's a bit of a slow burn because it's a weird character study. Krusty and Peter have so many difficulties and frustrations in their relationship that they've begun to despise each other, and the only thing keeping them together is murder. It's a fascinating franchise, and all entries sort of complement each other. They're brilliant at doing what they're aimed for. And lastly, Cliff posted this review. August Underground's Mordom was a tour de force of depravity, but this third film in the series is much closer to the boring original August Underground. Christy Wiles and Fred Vogel return, although it's unclear whether they're supposed to be the same characters as before. No reference is made to the devastating events of Mordom, but once again, their hobby is torturing, murdering, and cutting up innocent people. And as usual, the film is presented as the home video footage of their exploits, including too much of the mundane stuff they get up to in between crimes. With only two characters and no plot, there's nothing to really get your teeth into. A long scene which clearly hopes to outdo Henry Portrait, the serial killer's infamous home invasion sequence, fails to be anywhere near as shocking, because at no point have we been encouraged to sympathise with the perpetrators. And while Penance may have the best and most graphic gore content of the series, three films in, there's a real sense of diminishing returns. The worst thing is, by now, the relentless unpleasantness just seems par for the course. So I would kind of agree with most of that review, and maybe only a couple of bits of the first review. It's not necessarily a bad film. I would say, in a way, it's actually a pretty good film compared to the other two, but there is a sense of it's the same old, like I said, like Cliff mentioned, the law of diminishing returns. Like, to me, like, if you made a film as kind of disturbing as the second film, there isn't really anywhere else you can go. So yeah, even though it's, in inverted commas, a better made movie and it's more mature, it's just, okay, great. It's, what is the purpose of it? Doesn't really make a lot of sense. Now, to wrap the show up before I leave you guys, I just quickly wanted to play a clip from Lament Configuration, where we interviewed Paul McAvoy, who, if you don't know, is one of the co-organisers of Frightfest, which is a horror festival that takes place here in the UK. Now, the reason I wanted to play this is because it kind of ties up everything that I've been talking about on the show today. Now, one of the questions that we asked Paul was, is it possible for horror to go too far? This is what he said.
Yes, although I'm not in favour of any sort of censorship in any way, shape or form. But I think, for example, I mean, I've seen all of every type of bloody film, as you can imagine. I'm not a big fan of, like, the August Underground stuff, the stuff where it's trying to be,
it's like a snuff film
and, like, no plot, no art, just a bloke cutting up, usually a woman or sometimes a bloke. And it's just depressing to watch. And it's not, it's just artless. And for me, if something's got to have value, it's got to have some art. But I'm not dissing if they want to do that stuff. I'm sure it's got an audience for people who want to see, and some of it's shittily and shoddily done,
yeah,
isn't it?
Deliberately, yeah.
So that's not, that's for me, my personal, you know, I'm not keen on that.
So as you heard there, Paul was talking about August Underground, and he said the films have no plot, they're artless, and the films have to have art to have value. Now, for a show like this, you're going to watch a lot of really, really shitty films that are quite frankly made just to shock people, to offend, don't really have any purpose other than that. I'm thinking of films like Gutterballs, which I reviewed in the last series, or a film which is another fake snuff movie, which is Snuff 102, which is an Argentinian film, which was shit, quite frankly. Really bad, really boring, and no fun whatsoever. Now, is August Underground as bad a film as Snuff 102 or Gutterballs? I don't think it is. I mean, I'm not saying the film's amazing or anything, but for starters, people have actually heard of August Underground, so that kind of tells you something. It's managed to build up some kind of notoriety. Admittedly, you know, first film's 20 years old, so you'd kind of hope it would have by now. But yeah, from all the research I did for the episode, you can see a lot of hard work's gone into all three August Underground films are very low budgets, and they're properly made films. Like, there's actually thought put into what the actors were going to do in each of the scenes, like blocking the scenes, rehearsals, making sure people were okay with some of the absolutely horrible stuff they're being asked to do on camera. You know, there are no stories about Fred Vogel in the same way there are about Lucifer Valentine, let's put it that way. And obviously you've got things like the effects. These films are a great showcase for these practical effects, if nothing else. And in that regard, you can say that the first film, or in fact all of them, are artful for that reason. You could also say that because the first film is definitely trying to be a fake snuff movie, that it succeeded at that. And in the same way that people did with Cannibal Holocaust in the 80s, you could pick up August Underground and think it was a real snuff movie because you got the video effects and the general snuff aesthetic. So in that case, I would say the first film, maybe it does have artistic merit. Now, when we get onto the sequels, it gets a little bit murky, quite frankly. So second film, I mean, if you're charitable, you could say there's maybe a tiny little bit of art in that one. But really, the only purpose of that film seems to me to be as absolutely vile as possible, which, if that was the intention, then hey, guess what? They succeeded at that too. Does it give it artistic merit? I mean, I don't think so, but that's just my opinion. And then the third film, yep, tried to have, like I said earlier, character development and all the special effects, you can actually see them. So maybe there's artistic merit in that one, but it's debatable. I mean, to be honest with you, if you turned around to me, you said, Greg, these films, they're absolutely horrible. There's no reason for them to exist. It's just pointless nihilism and brutality for the sake of it. And if you like this, you're a sick cunt. Then, you know what? Not going to disagree with you. Can't disagree with any of that, you know? To me, having seen all the films, I mean, the first one achieved what it set out to do. I think the first one's the most interesting of the three. Second one, don't like it. Succeeds at being maybe the most disturbing film ever made, but it's the movie equivalent of being an edgelord, if you want to think of it like that. And the third one, even though it's technically a better made film, you could argue it's probably the best of the three if you want to, but if you're a fan of the second one, it's not as horrible. And if you're like me, you prefer the first one, it's just a bog standard fan footage film, and it's just, you know, like Law of Diminishing Returns, doesn't have any purpose other than just to be a sequel. And really, you only need to see the first one. It's kind of what I'm saying, and I'm rambling a bit, guys. Sorry, it's been a long show. These films really took it out of me. Yeah, you only really need to see the first one. But I'm not the biggest fan of these types of films, so feel free to ignore me. I'm sure many of you will do. However, if you are a fan of these films, and you want to own all three of them on physical media, then as far as I understand, they are only available from Toe Tag themselves, but they are out of stock. And as far as I know, they've been out of stock for quite a long time. So really, you're going to have to try and find them on places like eBay or, yeah, other similar kind of third-party sites like that. Because as far as I know, they're not available new anywhere. I saw them online. If you know where to look, you know where to look. I'm not going to advertise it because I don't want these places to get shut down. But yeah, if you know where to look online, you can find them to stream them uncut if you wanted to do that. Let's put it that way. So yeah, so that is the end of the first show in the new series. My name's Greg Knox. These are the worst date movies ever. I really, really, really appreciate you guys listening to the show, making it all the way through to the end. I put so much work into the show. You would not believe if I told you like how much aggravation and shit and kind of sweat and tears have been put into this particular episode of the show. The rest of the episodes will be up every Sunday, so look forward to hearing what you guys think of the new episodes. I want to thank everyone who's listened to any of the previous episodes, and yeah, stay tuned for more of the worst date movies ever. Thank you for listening. If you want to follow me on social media, you can at worst date movies ever. And don't forget to click subscribe wherever you're listening to this right now to never miss another episode of Worst Date Movies Ever.